ask me to buy alcohol, I try to have a conversation with them and say, you know, you're putting me at risk. You're putting yourself at risk. I mean, what's going on here?
That's a good point.
Why are you doing
that? That's a good point. But before we go into that,
it stops that kind of conversation.
Before we go into that, Chris, I want to point out this constant refrain that there's a loophole, that it is somehow illegal. It is not illegal for someone to ask someone to get alcohol if that results in alcohol getting to that person, is not true. It is illegal for me, as a minor, to solicit alcohol if that solicitation results in a purchase. That is illegal at the current time.
As far as I know, that was included, I think, in what we...
Am I wrong about this? I don't think so.
And he also included cigarettes on there.
Right.
It's not currently illegal to ask someone to buy you cigarettes, although there is a law that exists about concerning drugs... That it's illegal to ask somebody to buy you drugs.
It's not the asking. Well, let me clarify this. It's not asking that is illegal. It is getting the person to do it.
Yeah, that's illegal. Right,
that
now.
Is illegal,
right.
At the present
that's
time. It is illegal
this
to secure
illegal
that.
To ask.
Right. The act of speech becomes illegal. An act of one person speaking to another and saying, "Will you get me a beer?" If I say that to my college roommate, he's 21 and I'm 20, that becomes illegal under this code. Now, Mike, you're scoffing. That won't ever be enforced. You say
that example you gave will never be enforced.
You're saying that will never be enforced. Even if, let's say, a third person who doesn't like either of them, or if there's somebody with a grudge, you want to say that's a crime, and gets pissed and decides he wants to report it as an infraction crime.
The police wouldn't even show up for the call, Robert. Get real.
It would be illegal. It would be illegal behavior. We have an incoming call here, though. Go ahead.
I think just quickly, the thing to say is that about this is, in the example, I mean, it's a small point you're making. I think it's a small point. The difference between whether you have the right to ask someone to get you the stuff or whether it becomes illegal only after they bring it back to you and you then possess it. And my point would be, so you can stand out there in front of a liquor store. You can keep asking a series of people to buy you alcohol. They keep saying no or shining you on or whatever until eventually you can persuade someone to do it. Then you've broken the law. And I think the problem is we need to be clear with young people that standing in front of liquor stores or 7-Elevens and asking people to get you booze is not itself an acceptable behavior. It should be an illegal behavior. The consequence for it is an infraction, which I'll be happy to talk about when we get a chance. I'll wait till Christopher goes, if you like, but explain exactly how this law will operate if, in fact, anybody is ever arrested under it, cited under, I guess, not arrested.
I've got a caller here for the moment, though. Caller, what's up?
Yeah, I think it's a very unhealthy law that arises out of fear of intimidation. I think the societal response should be that the adults respond to that intimidation, but they don't create laws and criminalize the youth. To create laws out of fear of youth and to perpetuate that whole cycle of fear of youth and fear of and the boogeyman, I think is a real bad way for law to go, and that's the way we've been going for far too long.
Chris, any comment on that? And on what Mike has said?
Again, I'll go back to, I think it precludes the conversation between adult mentors and young people, and I just don't think it's the way to go. It also has the opportunity, or takes, you know, puts a young person in the criminal, it looks on them as a criminal, and I think that getting them in a system that then sort of, you know, is not, I don't think it's positive. I don't think it's positive to have that involvement at that level. If you're telling me that maybe someone who's a trained counselor was going to apprehend or at least confront the person who's asking for alcohol, I might be more willing to vote for it because I think they would get some direct counseling. But I think once you put, you know, I think our police officers, they do a lot of things, and they're trained in a lot of areas, but I don't think they're necessarily counselors, although they're called upon at times to be like that, but I don't think they necessarily want to do that. And I think we need a lot to focus a lot more on the counseling aspect of this.
Right. Now, another criticism I've heard, and I am, of course, an opponent of this law. Obviously, I'm not impartial here, clearly. And that's okay, because most of the council favors the law, and I feel that, you know, it looks like a done deal to me at the moment. But still, the issue is really an important one. Here's Police Chief Steve Belcher coming in with his law, as like a year ago he came in with criminalized being on the river banks of the San Lorenzo, and 2 years ago he came in with a youth curfew, and wham bam, it's a slam dunk for the Santa Cruz City Council. Even though he doesn't present stats about criminal behavior, he was asked about criminal behavior on the San Lorenzo River. He had no clear stats. I was at those council meetings. I heard anecdotal information. Now it is illegal for a couple to walk along the San Lorenzo River after dark. That's criminal behavior for adults. Now, what's happening here is, even though it's illegal for a youth to say, I want to buy a beer, go get me a beer, and the minute somebody goes in and gets a beer for that person, that becomes a crime. But it's not a crime for it to say, get me a beer. That, at the moment, it seems a clear civil liberties issue to me that a person has a right to say, can you get me a beer? I mean, even if it's not a good idea, I don't think it's a hot plan to do, but...
the stats issues, because it's another question I had
right.
from Mike from what he said before.
Right.
I have not seen any statistics on this whole shoulder tap thing, and Mike cited a United Way study, and I would be happy to look at that. It wasn't included in our pack, and I didn't know anything about it. I do know that there's a lot of anecdotal information out there on several sides of this issue, and I do want to say that the person that the city's relying on statistically, and at least to give some intellectual, sort of the white paper on how we should address alcohol and teen issues, was given to us, and he in fact says that we shouldn't, you know, that shoulder taps should not be a priority, that passing an ordinance such as this should not be a priority.
You're referring to what's his name?
His name is James.
I'm
not recalling it right.
He was referred to in the four-page staff report that City Council. You may remember his name, Mike. He was in that report. It's here. He is. That's the letter. We don't think we have the staff report.
I just thought it was interesting that we received information, the only information we in the end received concerning this issue that I can recall. Mike might recall something else that was in our packet, but I actually called this person. He lives locally. He's a nationally known person who does consult with cities on issues of alcohol.
What did he tell you?
And I only talked to his answering machine, and then he left an answering machine message back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that this is, in fact, a low priority. He doesn't understand why the police were using his name and his information concerning this issue, because they knew, according to him, that he was not recommending that. He wasn't recommending a shoulder tap ordinance.
Have you received any information from Chief Belcher about how this ordinance will be implemented? That's because that, to me, is really a key issue.
I can talk about that. I do want to say, again, the issue here of how likely it is in terms of high priority, this is not my highest priority either. I assume this would be a 15-minute discussion, passed on a first reading, passed on a second, and done with, and we'd put our energy into much bigger kinds of questions. That Christopher already mentioned, the teen center, which takes, you know, we have money for it, but a location to place it, perhaps more centers, like you said. The way this law would work, just to sort of lay this out as I understand it, and this is not something that was in our packet, but something that if we've been following, and to be fair to Christopher, he's new to the City Council, but the way that our criminal justice system handles young people generally is that when young people get cited with infractions, as this would be, they basically are, if you like, entered into the criminal justice system. And if your view is anything in the criminal justice system is evil, bad, and nasty, and once a person's caught up in it, their whole life turns to shit, then, you know, then you have a problem with this. But in fact, what happens is they get put on the juvenile probation list. That's where it goes from this. The police officer doesn't do the counseling with them, except if he maybe talks to them.
You mean if they're found guilty?
If, in fact, they're found, you know, the point is it starts a process in the juvenile
system. But it starts initially an adversarial process in court, unless he pleads guilty of the crime, right?
Although in juvenile court, the system is not as simply adversarial as it is in adult court.
Maybe
tell me
about juvenile court, because I haven't been to one. I've been on the outskirts of it.
It's a much more, the process, the whole goal is rather than simply like, you know, the prosecution versus the defense, and we're going to see who's got the evidence, you know, where it weighs in terms of things. Basically, the court's goal is to try and figure out what's in the best interest of the young person that's in front of the juvenile court.
But there's still a question of guilt or innocence.
Yes, there's still a question of guilt and innocence, but there's a whole lot more background work done by probation before they ever get there, and people try and figure out what's the nature of this case, how serious is it, what should happen. And
is there background by probation before the crime is determined to be a conviction?
Just as there would normally be, but in other words, someone has to look into this question and figure out, gather information about what's gone on with the thing. They look at the police thing, they look if there's problems in the family and so forth. Juvenile justice system is very different than adult.
So in other words, there is a probation report prior to whether there's a conviction on a crime?
Yes.
So that is a definite distinction from the adult system.
Yeah, it's a completely different system, because again, in adult court, the goal is either you're innocent or you're guilty. With juveniles, the question is more, what's the problem here? How can we address it in some way? And of course, ultimately, there's an issue of innocence or guilt that needs to be determined.
Now, I see a retired police officer in the back here who's kind of nodding.
Nodding yes or no.
he seems to have had some experience. We're talking, Mike Smith is also in the studio, who is, again, opposed, I believe, to the shoulder tap law. But you've had some experience in juvenile court. Is that accurate to say? Can we grab that?
Yes, it is. For over 27 years, I worked at juvenile hall in San Jose, so went before cases in court very often.
Uh-huh.
And Mike is very correct. It's very different from the adult system,
mm-hmm.
in that when a child comes in, there's a period of time before they go before a judge in which a probation officer investigates the home, investigates what alternatives may be represented to the court or presented to the court regarding the child, and in the best interest of the child, as Mike says, as opposed to the adult system.
Well, wouldn't this protect the youth, and should we be concerned about an adversarial situation, as Robert Caron for the ACLU says locally? I mean, isn't that taken care of, as Mike's, perhaps Mike is suggesting? Right, although we want to give Chris a chance because he's got 6 minutes left.
I'll just be really quick. Anyway, the vast majority of these cases would never go in front of a judge. In the vast majority of cases, there would be some, the youth would end up saying, yeah, I did it. They would not be some penalty other than often they make them write an essay about what they did and, you know, whether that's not appropriate behavior. They need to, sometimes they set up arrangements where they have to check in regularly with a counselor from probation. Other times, I mean, most of the stuff is non- it's not like they go to jail or a juvenile hall or any or even to a formal court hearing of some kind. They make an informal arrangement, and oftentimes...
But that can happen. Any of those things can happen.
It can happen in
these
cases if things move to that direction. But more often than not, in the vast majority of these cases, what's going to happen is there'll be some kind of a, if you like this word, a sentence will be determined before there's a formal hearing, simply by agreement between the youth or his and or his parents and the juvenile system, in which they work out something that's going to try and make sure that this stuff doesn't happen again.
Chris, have you had experience in this yourself? Maybe we can ask Mike, because he's been involved in juvenile court.
So I think that's basically, people have to understand that.
The
this
other
does
Mike.
Not always lead to a hearing. Like, typically an adult gets arrested, you're going to court.
I understand, but let's see what does actually happen in the juvenile system.
With an infraction, I think Mike's basically correct that it would unlikely that the child would end up staying in juvenile hall, would go to a foster home, would go to another type of institution, and so forth. But what it does is enter that as part of a juvenile record, nonetheless. Once they are admitted to juvenile hall, that is part of a juvenile record, basically.
Now, is that
but my concern, Mike, is there is that possibility. I do not see any preclusion or exclusion in this law that says it will only be handled out of the juvenile justice system and outside of juvenile hall. I think there is every possibility that it could be handled in juvenile hall, although it may infrequently or may never be in some cases.
Christopher here. There's too many unknowns in this whole thing, and I mean, a couple of questions that come immediately to my mind is, what if the parents aren't home when the child is arrested? What if they're on probation? That was never answered for me. If they've already got a prior, I think something like this, I was told by two different lawyers that they could be sent back to juvenile hall if they're on probation when they're arrested for the shoulder tap ordinance. Again, I think it puts a tremendous stigma on a young person, given how alcohol is looked at in our society. And again, I want to say that I do think there's some major problems with alcohol in our society. I don't think passing yet another law is the way to address it. I do think we should go toward social service programs, more counseling, that in that area. I don't think passing this law is going to be all that helpful. And I hope that we get some answers to some of these questions. There are some people in the community who spend a lot of time looking at this. I'm thinking of Margaret Marf, one person who's a lawyer. I'm thinking of Robert Taren, who wrote a letter
earlier.
The ACLU about this issue. I'm thinking of Ben Rice, who also wrote a letter. All of them, you know, said this is not something we should be passing.
But also Jim Mosher, the man you mentioned, who has actually wrote the main staff report city attorney did as well.
Said to target adults. Adult suppliers of alcohol, commercial and non-commercial, meaning someone who would buy it for you and person who would sell it to you at a commercial establishment, and that's what you're supposed to be targeting. This, you know, you shouldn't necessarily expend police resources on something of this nature, and that's another unknown. And Mike and I might disagree, and I don't know, and I don't know if we even have any statistics on it. He's going to say maybe because we haven't done it
yet. We're going to talk to him in a moment because you've got to leave shortly.
Is this going to take out of the police department?
Have we got stats on that?
On this, we don't have stats on it currently because we're not doing that and targeting that. But we do have police officers who do work with sort of the juvenile area and look at what young people are doing and you know, make the bus.
Well, the question I have here is one I've forgotten. But why don't you make your last points, because you're running out of time.
The stigmatization.
Unless you want to stay longer.
Being involved with the system, I don't think is cut and dry, as Mike says. I think that it has done. It's a very difficult issue when you're arrested, and you have to go to, you know, either home. In this case, they're saying taking someone home. You could also go to juvenile halls, I understand, too, in the worst case scenario, although that's not what they're going to do to kids if they are apprehended in front of liquor stores. I also think there's a selective prosecution thing going on here, too, that people, everybody, I go past Benicio's, for example, on Pacific Avenue. Everybody hanging out there is not necessarily looking for alcohol. It is a cool place to hang out. I personally don't find it a cool place to hang out. I wish it wasn't a cool place to hang out, but for some young people, it is a cool place to hang out. And until we have other cool places to hang out, people will continue.
That brings me to the
hang
question
out
I have
places
for you.
Like, you know, and I think everybody's on the council one time or another has, you know, not expressed something a negative view toward the couple liquor stores that we have around downtown.
The people that are pressing this issue, you know, are law enforcement. And I also wonder if it isn't sort of a stay-away kind of device for liquor stores and stores that sell liquor to get rid of young people from in front of their stores. I mean, isn't this to some extent part of the motivation? This is one of the concerns I've heard expressed.
I think that, that's
youth
an issue.
Removal ordinance.
155 young people from Santa Cruz High School signed a petition that expressed something like that sentiment as well. And I think that it is. It could be used as a move along. A couple of the lawyers who wrote letters also expressed that. I think that, you know, maybe Mike knows too. And a question for him would be, how actually did this get in the process, get in the hopper? How did it come to us?
And we're going
to
ask him that in the next half hour.
Two other council members, not Mike or myself, brought this forward. But I don't know what the origins of it were. And with those origins, why didn't the person who originated it also bring some statistics? Because I've only had anecdotal stuff, and I'd love to see the statistics, because I do think alcohol is a major problem. Is this the area we should be targeting? I'm not sure.
Before you go, we have in the studio with us Becky Johnson, who last night did a show on this for community television, and she's been kind of monitoring what's been going on. Becky, do you have any questions you want to put to Chris before I go, since you're going to have an opportunity to rake Mike here over the coals shortly?
I'm just looking at some of these letters that Chris made reference to. Here's a one from Margaret Marr, and she said, treating young people as criminals only encourages them to become criminals. And she says, thus once, if a juvenile is housed in a juvenile criminal facility, young people are enormously likely to reoffend. What would you say about that, this is treating young people like criminals for something that, like Mike Rotkin says, is very minor, but, you know, a young person who's cited may consider, and their parents may consider this very a major event in their lives.
I think that it's not surprising that civil liberties lawyers, Margaret Marr, Ben Rice, and Bob Terran, think that, you know, any infringement on people's individual liberties, any contact with the criminal justice system is bad and should be avoided. But if you talk to the people who actually have social service responsibility for young people, Terry Moriarty, who runs the youth services program, not just police, and who's not a police officer, but actually works on social service programs, or other folks that do that kind of work, they have a very different attitude to the criminal justice system as it applies to young people, the juvenile justice system, that it's not the stigma of it, it's the fact that somebody actually pays attention to what's going on. And again, if we had individual families that all knew what their kids were doing and took care of all these problems, there wouldn't be a need for any of these kinds of laws. But that's not what exists. And so their argument is that when you get somebody, quote, in the criminal justice system, it is not the beginning of some, like, path to hell. It's the beginning of a process of getting some kind of a wake-up call, where you meet with a counselor, where somebody suggests to you that maybe this is not the best way to go. And I want to really be clear about this. I don't think this needs to be targeted as the big problem in terms of this little loophole. It's a small little piece of what needs to happen. I didn't think we should put major kinds of attention on it. I think both people who are concerned about the criminalization of young people should put their major energy not into opposing this little thing, but dealing with Prop 21, which is a big, nasty problem. And the people who are in favor of trying to solve the problem of alcohol should, as I probably Christopher and I agree on this, put most of their energy into providing positive alternatives for young people. And certainly the police are not going to make this their major area of enforcement. They're going to continue to deal with busting the bars that actually serve people and the stores that sell alcohol to minors.
Politically speaking, Mike, this is sort of, you know, a liberal, you know, left of center community. This doesn't seem like a left of center issue And in the sense of when you say there's a loophole being closed here, no other community in California has this law, at least to our city attorney's knowledge. Some of them were surprised when he called around and found out that they didn't have that law, or that law didn't exist anywhere else, that there was the loophole. But I don't see it as a loophole. That's Mike's word. But I just wondering why Santa Cruz, why now? As you expressed, there's other ways, there's other problems that we need to put more emphasis on. Why are we going ahead and doing this? Because I just feel like the carrot and the stick, we're giving the stick more often than we're giving a carrot to our young people.
Keep the mic for the moment, because Mike is going to be, keep the mic, because Mike, you're going to be talking about this issue at length in the next half hour, and you got to go very shortly, Chris. The question I guess I have is since there are no stats that have been presented by by Chief Belcher on the current situation, I mean, it seems to me it's a police theory about how to deal with this problem. You don't have any evidence from other jurisdictions. Mosher, the guy who they're relying on as their expert, says he doesn't think it's a particular, there's no indication that it works. So the question is, what's the point? Maybe it's a propaganda exercise, sort of like saying, we oppose drinking. If you stand outside and ask these questions, it's not acceptable behavior. Sort of, maybe that's what we're talking about, some sort of feel-good kind of comment along that line. Why do you feel so strongly, Chris, that you're willing to put the kind of, you spent a couple hours in the last two council meetings running through very specific concerns about why this should not become law. And you still feel that way, I imagine. Has anything you heard changed your mind? Have you received any news from Chief Belcher? Any arguments from Mike Rodkin here that have made you feel, I mean, Terry Moriarty favors it. Doesn't that persuade you that it's a social service benefit?
I would say that Terry Moriarty made some good points, and I respect his work. We disagree on this particular issue, although I think Terry also expressed at that time that this was not something that should be a priority necessarily when doling out the resources in the area of criminal justice.
Also, I mean, some people are saying, well, gosh, the city council went to the Santa Cruz High School to ask, of course, they didn't go, I noticed, up to the university, where they probably would have been stoned off the campus for bringing up such a regulation, and articulately stoned off the campus. And they also held their session 2.5 hours after the school day had ended, so most students were not available for that. But
that was not intentional.
Conspiracy. Well, yeah, but it certainly wasn't very well planned, let me put it that way.
Although I will say, for the young people's part, we did have 60 to 70 young people there out of a meeting of probably 120 people altogether attended.
15 to 20 police officers in plain clothes, I know, interestingly enough. But what I'm wondering is the students overwhelmingly said, we don't want this law. And I'm not saying that they necessarily should be the determining factor, but don't you want to go to people who are students? And I don't mean students who are the apple polishers, who are the few students who were clearly working closely with the police department who favored the law. Most of them opposed it. And most of the people, I guess Becky Johnson here went on campus and talked to students and tried to get some indication of who favored it. Mike, maybe in your half hour, I want to talk to you about the contacts you've had with young people and their opinions. Because certainly, though they're not the experts, they don't have all the wisdom, but they have some of it. And they know how students operate with each other, how peer group pressure works, and whether this is a good idea. Is one of the main reasons you continue to oppose this because youths obviously overwhelmingly oppose it?
That's a major issue for me, is that we need to listen to young people more than we do right now. And I do think that there's a lot of wisdom not only in our older folks but also in our younger folks, and I think we need to bring that wisdom together. I think I disagree with Mike on the issue of the civil liberties lawyers who just think that no one should get involved with the criminal justice system. I know a few lawyers who are civil libertarians. They have friends within the criminal justice system. They who are law enforcement people. They don't necessarily think that the law, the legal system is the police are evil, or the courts are evil. And I think Bob Tarrant expressed that you bring these young people, if you bring them in to the criminal justice system, you have a sense of that you're bringing them into something that might not necessarily need to be brought into. And that's, obviously against his livelihood, because maybe the more people who are brought into the criminal justice system, the more casework he might have, or lawyers might have.
Is there a financial kicker here? When Sheriff Mark Tracy went for the county youth curfew in 95 or 96, there was a huge federal grant of money involved in doing this. Is there any money involved in this kind of proposition?
Not that I know of right now.
The police department isn't going to get any benefits of this federally. Are they going to get some indication that they're helping the youth?
I think there's an idea of possibly there'll be a decoy program and then grants will be forthcoming, but that has not been talked about. That's only been speculated upon by members of the community.
I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but you know, but the police department is, you know,
you a conspiracy theorist?
Certainly not.
It'd have to be a conspiracy based on no facts.
That would be
a groundless conspiracy theorist, for heaven's sake. And we're on the second floor.
Robert, right? I have to go, but I really appreciate being on your show, and.
Chris, we appreciate your coming. I want to encourage you again to speak out on other issues as you have been willing to speak out on this issue. Mike, I tend to, in a way, I kind of agree with Mike that a lot of time and energy has been spent on this issue, that I would like to see you apportioning some of your energy on other issues like the Dolphin Lee issue, like the issue of immediate homeless shelter. We've had 3 beatings in the last 3 weeks of homeless people, verified beatings by the Homeless Services Center, and probably more. We have a situation where the shelter is at 90% capacity, and according to Ken Cole, will be full, and you're going to have a situation where people are going to get ticketed outside.
Well, I'll let your guest get the last word.
So what I'm saying here is, thank you, Mike. I appreciate your opportunities. Mike has always got a free word here for us.
Him leaving to give him a speech. You know,
no, the reason I'm giving you a speech is I really think a lot of us who are listening want you to speak out on other issues as well, the way you've spoken out on this issue.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate your support.
And try avoiding that pepper spray and those bullets. And we were going to send Officer Lefevre up to save you and Sophie from the mob of up there, but we decided against it.
I hope people know that Robert wouldn't let me talk about the World Trade Organization protests.
I successfully muzzled this man. I want you to know that.
He just cut me off.
My God.
And there was definite censorship, and I'm calling the FCC right now.
Get the gag. Thank you, Chris. So you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It's the changing of the guard. Becky Johnson is going to take over the position of Chris Krohn. Thanks, Chris. We have in the studio here at 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, Councilmember Mike Rotkin. You love to hate him. And Becky Johnson, that video journalist, producer, and the person who actually has been doing a lot of lobbying around the issue of shoulder tap, I should say against shoulder tap. What I'm going to do now is remind all you people out there that there is an open line, and is this issue so irrelevant that we're going to have nobody calling in for the next 25 minutes? We've had no calls for the last 20 minutes. 427-3772 is the phone number, so please, 427-3772, if you think, ha, well done. If you think that this deserves your interest, call in, and here's a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. Yeah, I think this whole debate is really ridiculous. I think that it's pretty obvious that creating more laws to incarcerate our youth is just going to create more criminals. It's been shown. I mean, it's really ridiculous. It's like especially in Santa Cruz, where we choose what. Who and what to look, you know, look at as far as, I mean, you go by that Metro wall, it's like, you know, they're, you know, dealing drugs and stuff, which I don't care, you know, one way or the other, like, I'm not, this isn't about the drug thing, but I mean, and then they're gonna, like, do a program for this alcohol thing. It's just total,
Well, caller, are you a youth yourself? Are you like, will you be criminalized under this ordinance if you ask somebody to get you booze?
No, but like 80% of my friends would be.
Well, don't you think, I mean, don't you have some alcoholic friends? Aren't you concerned that they need to be deterred from, you know, a bad course of behavior, purchasing liquor? You could say no or yes. Whatever.
No, I don't think that's the way to deter. And I think that, programs like youth services, definitely like having clean and sober high schools or whatnot is definitely the way to go. And I've seen many more kids get sober through programs like that than through incarceration.
Well, remember, we're being told by Mike Rotkin and to some extent by Chief Belcher, although again it is rather vague what the actual process is. We haven't got any stats, and I think even Mike will agree with us on that.
that, you know, there will not, incarceration will not be a major component of this program. Instead, it's going to be writing, I will not drink 60 times on the blackboard, or an essay perhaps, or, I don't know, cleaning the graffiti off the San Lorenzo Bridge. I mean, I'm not quite sure what they would do.
What about the what's in place right now with the whole you lose your license? That is the whole start of how people get incarcerated. They lose their license, right? And then, you know, it's like you're going to tell a kid not to drive. So then they're driving under suspended.
You're talking about losing your license for drinking, or losing your license for smoking marijuana, or losing your license for some other crime?
I think it's being drinking underage. You can lose your license, right, for a year.
I don't know anything about that.
I believe that's true.
He believes it's true. So you're suggesting...
So I'm saying that just little things like that, something like that, is the start of someone doing, you know, violating probation later on and going to state prison.
So your point is well taken.
They drank as a youth.
So it's not merely if you're drinking and driving, but if you're simply drinking, you can lose your license.
Right, if you're under 21.
So Mike, there's a good question for you. Let's jump from the shoulder tap to that one question. This is clearly incarceration of young people. Would you oppose this as a law?
I strongly oppose it.
So Mike Rotkin, as you come out against the idea of incarceration for young people, losing your license for drinking, not driving at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's an inappropriate response to the problem. I mean, I think people should lose their license for drinking and driving, but that's a very different issue than if you get, you know, caught with a joint or
or
have a problem with a drink or something that they're going to take your license away for a year. You might want to lose it for a week or something. A wake-up call wouldn't be a problem, but to say to somebody you're not going to drive for a year because you got caught with a beer somewhere in public is an outrage. And that's an example to me, again, where you incarcerate people. It's a very different story than putting them into the, and then this is a key issue, whether you're going to put people into kind of a counseling program, get them some attention for the problem, get them to recognize there's something not right here if they're hanging out in front of a liquor store trying to, like, shoulder tap people. That's a very different question than should we lock people up because they had a drink somewhere, which is a whole different issue to me. It's a very different question.
Any other questions, caller?
No, I just think that we can't just take, like, a small percentage of what's going on and just focus on that and say, like, that's the problem, like the liquor stores, but like kids running around in the flats, you know, isn't a problem till we decide that it's a problem. You know, if we're gonna, like, get serious about kids, let's get serious about kids. But like,
how can we get serious about kids, caller?
Well, I think starting would be, you know, there's supposedly like $150,000 set aside for a youth center, and like, from what I hear, they're saying, well, no one's come up with a plan. It's like, you know, who's supposed to come up with a plan? But, why can't city council themselves come up with a plan, or why can't somebody initiate, you know?
There's actually a youth... The reason we haven't come up with one is because we assigned it to a group that includes a number of adolescents and young people and asked them to figure out what kind of a youth center they wanted to have. It was almost 3 years, 4 years ago now that we set the money aside, and it's now $225,000. It was originally $150,000, and it's waiting for this group to sort of make some concrete suggestions to us. Rather than us plan on their youth center, we want them to plan it.
What's the name of the group?
Yeah, for...
I don't know the name of it, but the Christina Della Mar is the city parks and recs person that works with the...
Certainly, young people, a long time.
The young people's
years.
Groups. Yes, I've been really disappointed in it and really concerned about it. I raised it a number of times, what's happened to this and why is it moving ahead. But it's not that the city council, I mean, the money is usually the hard part. We put that up front. The issue now is probably going to be a combination of two things, part of which I think is on the youth and part of which is on the city council and the city. The part on the youth is, what kind of a center do they want? It has to be one that's effective. Nobody wants to create a center no one's going to use. The other part of it is, where would it go? And I'm sure, like everything else in this town, the where question becomes really difficult. And at least if the young people got a clear sense of what kind of center they wanted, I would be on top of the case of where it goes and pushing harder to see it.
I think it should go right where that Crown Books was. Why, you know, but obviously they're going to keep the kids out of the north part of the mall, you know.
Anything else, caller?
No, thanks.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Let me ask, Becky Johnson here has been consulting her notes. I want to get back to shoulder tap to some extent, which I know, you know, is... I guess the question that comes to my mind is, indeed, it's not any kind of compulsory incarceration, but it is a form of criminalization in the sense that you're not saying, we have alcohol programs. Come on into the alcohol programs. We can help. We're not just talking about, you know, give your soul to God and do a 12-step program. We're not talking about, you know, some sort of punitive thing or some sort of... We have some alternatives, like with... with heroin addicts. You say to heroin addicts, we've got programs for you to come in, and you're swamped. People want to come in from heroin addiction in many cases.
And alcohol programs.
And they just are not the programs available. Instead, the police department is finding a way, it isn't really providing more programs with this proposal. Instead, it is essentially engaging in a process of stigmatizing and criminalizing in a limited fashion. It doesn't necessarily lead to incarceration, but we are talking about crime. This is because an infraction is a crime. Becky, do you have any thoughts on this? After which I'll suggest Mike might want to have some thoughts too. I mean, isn't there another way to go on this whole thing than criminalize?
Well, of course, and going back to what Mike was saying about Terry Moriarty supporting this as being, you know, in the social services area, there's not unanimity of opinion in the social services. I have a letter here from Emily Galpern, who's of the Youth Coalition of Santa Cruz. She's an adult who works with youth on a daily basis, and she's opposed to this. She says young people are constantly bombarded with glamorous alcohol advertisements, and she's concerned about the growing criminalization of young people. It's become a national trend, and she sees this as just another example. You can respond to that if you'd like. I wanted to go back to another thing that you said, that it was a very tiny issue, small. You thought it would just breeze through quickly and move on to more important things. But I am more bothered by this than it would seem. My main concern about this law is not about youth drinking. The shoulder tap law is about businesses that are seeking to expand stay away orders. Now, these are court orders which will ban an individual young person from not only from that business, but a lot of times these court orders ban a person from the entire downtown area. And then they may also, these stay away orders may include all kinds of sort of restrictions, such as which are depending on the judge's mood, really. They might be search clauses or orders not to gather with other people who are also similarly convicted. I predict the law will be selectively enforced against homeless youth, counterculture youth, and youth of color, as we find many of our ordinances are. If young people are gathering around a business that happens to sell alcohol, all we need is a cop who talks to a merchant, and the two of them agree that that's what these young people outside their store are trying to do. An infraction, of course, means that there's no right to a public defender or a jury trial. And it sounds like with the juvenile justice system, that whole process of determining guilt and innocence is sort of bypassed.
It's only if the youth and their family doesn't want to fight the thing and go to court on it. In other words, there are often solutions that it's not the right term, but plea bargaining, you know, is being a closer parallel to it. You don't go to court if you agree before you get there. Even there, you go to court in a plea bargain, and the court sort of imposes the stuff that works out with young people.
But you still get a record on a plea bargain.
No, I know, when you go to court, but the thing is you might not get a record at all in terms of these kinds of situations because it will never get to court because it'll be solved because the young person decides not, you know, say, yeah, I did it, but, it, you know, it's, and they say, well, you shouldn't do it, and it's not writing on the blackboard. They get them to write an essay that's hopefully, at least in theory, supposed to be reflective about...
And it won't be on their record?
It depends on the individual case.
See, this is the question I have. I mean, it's so vague. I mean, I would like... You're a man who's had experience for 20 years in Santa Cruz with different aspects of the criminal justice system, but do you have any clear sense of how young people are treated, you know, around this, not so much even around this issue, but in terms of this whole process? I mean, it's not clear to us.
Yeah, I mean, I think this really cuts to the heart of what this is about. If in fact what happened is people violating this ordinance found themselves on a quick train to you know, the criminal justice system, to a criminal record, to juvenile hall and everything else, I would be opposed to it. I think it would be a disaster. And when we look at is you have to be careful in trying to compare what we're doing here in Santa Cruz with other communities, because there are other communities where to come to the attention of juvenile authorities is in fact a quick trip to CYA, California Youth Authority, or other kinds of forms of incarceration or serious kinds of penalties. And in Santa Cruz, the Juvenile Probation Department has worked really hard to come up with a non-punitive approach, restorative justice ideas that, you know, when young people commit crimes against people, stealing from them and so forth, that the idea that locking them up is not necessarily a good solution either for the victim or for the young person.
But they still get a record.
They may get, in that case, if it was a theft, it would be a serious crime, and, you know, it might be a felony or a misdemeanor. But in terms of these infractions, but they've established a system here where they really, it is more counseling than it's, in terms of how what actually goes on, much more counseling situation than a locked up criminal justice system. And they end up basically meeting with a probation officer in some cases for a number of weeks, and then are dropped from the system if things work out well. I want to say this is important. I want to respond to two things that came up, because I'd never get a chance to get these points in. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a free speech issue. It's free speech if you're saying, if a person wants to stand on the corner and say, young people should be allowed to drink, leave us alone, or we should be allowed to drink under certain circumstances or whatever, that's free speech. Asking somebody to buy you a drink is an act. It's a commission of something. It's not a free, it's not a statement of your views about something in the world. And it's a mistake when, and we've had the same debate over homeless issues and over sleeping ban questions. The fact that one thing to sort of speak out about your views about some issue, and I believe strongly those should not be repressed, and that anybody should have the right to stand in front of a liquor store or any place else, hold a sign, give a speech about the rights of young people being abused, and if they believe we should change the law or whatever, that's fine. That's different than the actual act of asking, of, you know, starting a process of trying to get alcohol. And on the question of where this is likely to go, you said, well, it's not automatically something that sends some people to jail. My prediction is nobody will be arrested under this law. Ask the question, now we'll go back, and we have a history on this. On the downtown ordinances, which, among other things, deal with aggressive panhandling, ask the question, since this thing passed, how many people have been arrested under the aggressive panhandling ordinance that we passed in the city of Santa Cruz? Zero. Nobody. Single person has been arrested under that law.
False.
Well, I'd be interested to come back and show sometime and talk about it.
I can send you to public defenders. People have been repeatedly arrested under the panhandling ordinance. And you're wrong on that, Mike.
Well, that's not my information.
Yeah, I'll be happy to contact me later. What?
Aggressive.
Well, it depends on what you mean. If there people have been arrested,
the downtown ordinances,
yes,
so-called downtown ordinances,
under the downtown paneling ordinance,
there was a bunch of arrests that happened early on for people sitting on the sidewalk.
No, I'm talking about arrests for panhandling, the violation of the specific municipal codes. Yes.
Okay, I'd be interested in knowing more about that, because I look through the records every month and I haven't seen anybody being arrested for that.
What records are you? You were talking about the police department's records.
Sends the records every month on, you know,
yeah. We'll have to send you some of the public defenders who are defending these people.
But my prediction is this is more an ordinance that will have an educational effect, that a small number of people may be cited under it. That's possible. It's most likely that this is not, because again, the people that are arrested probably would be arrested under the stronger law that exists now if they actually reach the point of getting alcohol on their hands through this process. This is more likely going to be something that allows a police officer, and I don't think this is bad. You might think this is bad, but I don't. Allows a police officer to say to somebody, look, we just got a report that you've asked three people in a row to get you booze. They complained to the clerk inside, and right now, there's nothing the officers can do about that. They can come out and they say, if we catch you with a beer, you're going to be in big trouble. But it's not against the law for the person to keep asking.
Sure, but
and the police officers don't have the time. We don't have that many officers in Santa Cruz where they're going to stand at the liquor store, and of course, if they stand there, it won't happen. The kids will move away.
I think if a young person is told this by a police officer that we know you're outside the liquor store, they will the vamoose lickety split.
They may, but they may not. In fact, one of the issues we have is that people just hang out there, and the police officers come and they say you shouldn't be doing this, and there's no particular law that's being broken or issue about it. And I really, honestly, don't believe there's going to be a large number of kids of any kind swept up by this, put into the criminal justice system or anything else. I think what it's going to be is one little small deterrent in an overall situation. Now, let me be clear about Terry Moriarty. He's not in favor of this as the big solution. He was dragged out of the audience.
Of
he wasn't the one that came down and advocated for this.
No.
And they asked, well, what do you think about this? And he said, well, this would be, I support this. This would be a good thing to do. But of course, the first thing you want to do is have programs for young people, both positive programs and, as you'd mentioned, Robert, alternative programs for people who want to get off, who are alcoholics or have problems with alcohol and want to get into a program to deal with that. And this is a very small piece at the end of something, and I feel that strongly. I wouldn't support this in the absence of actual programs for young people,
we
both positive and alternative.
I want to respond to your comment about the first Amendment issue of freedom of speech. It does criminalize the content of speech.
We're going to interrupt this discussion for a quick call from Seattle, which is just coming in long distance. Hi there, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, we are here in Seattle. We have been in the streets. There is so much energy here. It is so powerful. You know, the fascist state can do what they can, but there are so many people from all over the world here.
What happened today, Joe?
Well, today there was a peaceful rallies, mostly peaceful, always peaceful, really, actually. And we marched from the United Methodist Church down to the park at the lower end near the Pike's Market, and heard Jim Hightower and Ralph Nader and a myriad number of other activists, local activists.
Now, we understand from yesterday's papers, or today's paper, that the police cordoned off 50 blocks downtown.
Yes, they had a national, there was a national state of emergency, there was the National Guard in there, and they were trying to keep people out, you know,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, keeping people out, but, you know, it was, it all was the intent to keep them away from,
were there any arrests?
Us away from.
Did they succeed in stopping you from blocking the delegates?
Well, yeah, no, we were only able to do that the Tuesday morning when we were sitting in solidarity with thousands of other activists blocking, we blocked the Sheraton.
And what happened? Today that didn't happen.
No, that didn't happen, because the cops moved in with tear gas and mace.
Was there any of that happening today, any macing or tear gassing?
No, I didn't see any tear gassing today. There was, of course, extensive amount. Oh, actually, there was today in Capitol Hill area, so in certain areas.
Were there arrests?
No, not arrests. What they do is they intimidate, they shove with their batons, they mace residents. I mean, residents, people who live there. This is an occupied city by the police fascist state. It's incredible. But it's right there, and that's what's good about this, because people can then see the nature of who we're dealing with.
Well, now, are your numbers diminishing, increasing, staying the same? What's the plan
for tomorrow? There was like 3,000 or 4,000 people today. And, you know, the cops stopped us. We marched a certain distance, and then they stopped us. They cordoned it off, and you know, the decision has been made, I think, not to try to breach the police barricade. I mean, it's a very, it would be a very difficult thing to do. And
are Santa Cruzans in jail up there?
Oh, yes. We have people from our affinity group in jail. Ruth Hunter, one of the incredible activists, local activists, is in jail today. I think Peter Lumsdaine is. Many people locally are.
I think Mike is going to fly up there and join them in solidarity, right, Mike?
Who?
Mike Rodkin. He's in the studio.
Yeah, well, that's, you know,
I'm kidding. I got no news that he's going to do that.
No, but there is an incredible amount of solidarity here. We, you know, the cops.
Earlier in the day, people were asking.